Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century look at the biggest albums in rock history.
Guitar up. One, two, three.
I'm Redbeard, and today Keith Emerson, Greg Lake, and Carl Palmer join us in the studio for their most popular album, Brain Salad Surgery.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. Cold and misty morning, I heard a warning bone in the air.
This Carnival 9 thing, basically about computers, the way computers take people over. In fact, there was a lot of foresight in that, now come to think of it. And although computers weren't new at that time, the extent to which they have become dominant throughout society was something that I must say that we foresaw at that time. And I think the line was, load your program, I am yourself.
Hi, this is Keith Emerson.
And I'm Greg Lake.
And this is Carl Palmer of Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
And you're in the studio for
Brain Salad Surgery.
Emerson, Lake and Palmer's most successful and well-realized album after their first, and their most ambitious as a group, as well as their loudest, sums up Bruce Etter on AllMusic.com when assessing Brain Salad Surgery. While not really a supergroup when they formed in England in 1970, Keith Emerson did have a reputation for classical keyboard wizardry from his time in the band The Nice. Greg Lake had earned instant credibility as the singing bass player on the inaugural King Crimson classic In the Court of the Crimson King. And Carl Palmer's bombastic drumming had powered another three-piece band, Atomic Rooster. But Emerson, Lake and Palmer's 1970 debut sold more copies than The Nice, King Crimson, and Atomic Rooster combined. And with subsequent albums Tarkus and Pictures at an Exhibition, both in 1971, and the progressive rock High Point Trilogy in 1972, ELP were quickly one of rock's biggest bands when Brain Salad Surgery was released in late November 1973. The title was borrowed from the Dr. John hit of the same period called Right Place, Wrong Time, and the first single ahead of the album's release was thought by all in the band to be a slam dunk, a majestic ELP electric version of Sir Charles Perry's and William Blake's British hymn, Jerusalem, second only to God Save the Queen as the British national anthem. Except that's not what happened, according to first Greg Lake, followed by Carl Palmer.
It's a bit of a national anthem type of thing, you know. And
that's what it is.
You've got the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, and they're very conservative, or they were more conservative then. And I think they felt it was a bit of an affront to Britishness, you know, that we sort of took this thing and Carl says we did. It was a good version of it, isn't it?
It was a great version. Personally,
right, you know.
I mean, there's no personal contact with these people, so you can't actually get hold of them and say, explain, you know, what is the problem? Not that we would change the piece of music, but there's nothing you can do in that situation. So I thought that was a little bit of a loss because it was a great piece of music. It got banned and there was quite a big sort of thing about it. And it wasn't as if you could, like, take guys out and say, let's have dinner and talk about it, you know? Let's go and have a drink. It wasn't like that. These people just would not play it. They said, no, it was a hymn and we had taken it the wrong way.
Mountains.
Sounding completely harmless and most reverential here years later, that's the leadoff song Jerusalem from Emerson, Lake & Palmer's Brain Salad Surgery. For all of their fame then, marrying electronic instrumentation with classical arrangements, truth be told, it was Greg Lake's written and sung ballads, such as Lucky Man on the debut and From the Beginning on Trilogy, that had crossed ELP over to mainstream popularity. Sure enough, there was another one on Brain Salad Surgery called Still You Turn Me On, but it was never released as an Emerson, Lake & Palmer single. Greg Lake and Carl Palmer explain why not.
I think the reason for that was that we felt that the acoustic pieces, whilst they were more accessible from a radio standpoint, they were songs, people could remember them, and that they weren't really typical of the band as a whole. They were more Greg Lake. They were more just things that applied more, really, to me. And I think we had a couple of them, and we felt that we didn't want to get sort of tagged with ELP does acoustic singles. You know, that was the main thinking behind it. I think we all felt more and more that we didn't want to be hung on that label that we're doing Greg Lake singles all the time, that it was ELP. You know, we had come, you've got to bear in mind that we'd come from a whole background of where singles weren't really the thing, you know. I mean, it was almost frowned upon, singles, when we, you know. So, I don't know, it just didn't materialise.
I think it was quite an honest approach we had there, because we didn't want to mislead anyone, you know what I mean? And then thinking that this was a band playing a single, because it wasn't. And I think we still got the kind of coverage we needed from that particular single. It still hit the airwaves, you know.
Wanna be an angel, you wanna be a star. Wanna play some magic on my guitar. Wanna be a poet, you wanna be my string. You could be anything. Do you wanna be the lover of another? Undercover, you could even be the man on the moon. Do you wanna be the player? Do you wanna be the string? Let me tell you something. It just don't mean a thing. You see, it really doesn't matter when you're buried in disguise. By the dark glass on your eyes, though your flesh has crystallized, still you turn me on. Still you turn me on. Let me tell you something, you just couldn't be more wrong. You see, I really have to tell you that it all gets so intense. From my experience, it just doesn't seem to make sense. Still, you turn me on.
You turn me on.
From brain salad surgery, from Emerson, Lake & Palmer, boldly embracing the brave new world of electronic synthesizers was the focus not only of keyboard player Keith Emerson, but of percussionist Carl Palmer as well.
Well, at that particular time, most bands had an electrician, which they would employ almost full-time. We had one that was in the sort of R&D area, research and development, for the band. And the particular problem that I faced at the time, there was no electronic equipment, though Bob Moog had made something for drums, which I thought was adequate. So this chap actually worked for the whole band. He would like do pedal boards and things for the organ and whatever. So at the same time this was all going on, we would sit and talk and about, you know, what would be nice. And he basically came up with them various boards that were similar to that were in the keyboard synthesizers that I could actually use and trigger from a pad, trigger from a drum. And we used what you would call little contact mics. We used them way back then, but inside the drum, not stuck to the drum, to trigger the sound. And basically, I had an octave sort of switch where I could jump between, say, an octave, the sound, whatever I had, the sound couldn't be changed, except it could be made higher or lower. And I had 8 of these boxes. They were roughly the size of a cigar box. And they were banked together, and that was the percussion sort of synthesizer, as it were. They really weren't that flexible, and what you heard was what you got. The button situation, as far as changing sounds, was okay, not reliable, and that was about it, really. There was nothing to buy in the marketplace. At least here, I had sort of 8 different sounds, which were very clear, you know, and they all sort of complemented each other.
Emerson, Lake & Palmer's outrageous arrangement of Argentine classical composer Alberto Ginastera's first piano concerto, 4th movement, christened as Toccata on Brain Salad Surgery. Up next, the story behind the unforgettable album cover. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and find live Greg Lake performances too at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Carl Palmer, plus the voices of the late Keith Emerson and the late Greg Lake, in the studio, performing Brain Salad Surgery.
Welcome back to In the Studio, spotlighting Brain Salad Surgery from Emerson, Lake & Palmer. I'm Greg Lake.
Hi, Carl Palmer here, in the studio.
Hi, this is Keith Emerson. Welcome back to In the Studio, this week featuring Emerson, Lake & Palmer's Brain Salad Surgery.
Who can forget the macabre custom album cover for Emerson, Lake & Palmer's 1973 release Brain Salad Surgery? On the original vinyl cover, a skull skewered into some medieval torture vice opens up to reveal the face of an exotic ancient pharaoh queen with Sophia Loren lips. Keith Emerson and Greg Lake reveal how they discovered the original artwork by the Swiss painter H.R. Geiger.
I think we were playing in Zurich. And I got invited over to this guy's apartment, as I recall. And I was completely amazed at the place. I mean, this guy was like on acid. And it was wall-to-wall stuff. And I said to Greg and Carl, you gotta meet this guy. It's like, he's really out there.
And his house is like a horror movie. I mean, it's dark. And it's full of the type of artwork.
Everything. He was into sculptures
on this cover, and it is really it's a horrible place to be, but it's very impressive.
And we said, this is amazing. We have to use this for an album cover design, and he hadn't done album covers before. We looked at several of his ideas and said, well, we like this bit here, this part, because he had so much of that sort of style. It was really difficult to focus in on one particular area. It's interesting to note that Geiger went on to do the scenario for the film Alien. After that, he designed that monster that you see in the film. That was before he was actually discovered. But, definitely a strange technique. I mean, it's airbrushing.
But the guy himself is a sweet character. You know, it's a real sort of dichotomy. It's a strange thing because he's totally, when you meet him, you think you were going to meet somebody who was possessed by the devil, you know. Actually, when you talk to him, he's a very sweet, hi, you know, very sweet chap. So it's a very funny thing.
We had a lot of problems with the album cover, actually, to begin with, because there's various things on it which we couldn't really print, could we? The phallicness of it was a bit
right
over
there,
the top.
The phallicness is right in front of you.
If you look harder, yeah.
No, it's even, on the CD it stands out a lot. No, that's good. Well,
everybody's going to be sort of like, well, let's check this out. Just keep looking. Well, the interesting thing was when you played the actual vinyl copy, the label on the record, you know, where you put the hole through the middle, it actually went through the lady's
please,
mouth.
Please don't continue.
What?
Yeah, so that was that. So it was a bit of a good cover. But the whole thing is his ability to sort of.
To be perverted.
to bond all this together in this way, you know. He's a fabulous artist. And it is a great cover. I mean, all credit to him for doing it.
For the musical centerpiece to Brain Salad Surgery, Greg Lake invited lyricist Pete Sinfield from his King Crimson days to collaborate on Carn Evil 9. Here's Greg Lake.
That was what was fun about working with Pete, you know. We used to do these things and dream a lot. Which all started really in the King Crimson days, you know, and we used to really get into dreaming and scheming. I'd been writing, I mean, I've written, it goes back to King Crimson, The Court of the Crimson King, that I've written with Pete. And we've done various things throughout ELP. I don't know, I love the way Pete writes, you know, I've enjoyed working, he's a great lyricist. It was, I don't know, it was just a comfortable, natural thing to do. I've learnt a tremendous amount from him. And it just fitted at the time, you know. We came up with these concepts, this Carnival 9 thing, basically about computers, the way computers take people over. In fact, there was a lot of foresight in that, now I come to think of it. And although computers weren't new at that time, the extent to which they have become dominant throughout society was something that, I must say, that we foresaw at that time. And I think the line was, load your program, I am yourself. So that was, I think there was a degree of foresight in that.
And certainly one of the cutting-edge dreams 4 decades ago was to invent the original surround sound effect called quadraphonic for both home playback and live concert sound. Emerson, Lake, and Palmer employed 36 tons of stage, sound, and lights. That's 24,000 pounds per band member to perform Brain Salad Surgery live on tour in quad 30 years before 5.1 surround sound would catch on. But the 4-channel quad concert sound was not without its drawbacks, according to Greg Lake.
The one problem with quadraphonic sound is it is dependent on where you're sitting. If you're sitting in one corner of the quad, you know, it's disorientating. And so its use is limited. But I still feel it's worthwhile. I like it in a live concert setting. It isn't something that you can broadcast the whole music through all the time. But it's appropriate at moments. And it's a wonderful effect. Changes the perspective for a while. And if only for that reason, I think it's a nice effect. I personally was sad to see the end of quad sound, because I think people would be prepared to sit in their living rooms and set their living rooms up for quad. And I think they didn't give enough credit to people's, you know, preparedness and integrity to go and do that. And so it was a bit of a shame, really, because it's one of the nicest effects, really.
We always reinvested back into the group. And live performance was a very important part of the career to reinvest in, apart from just the records.
We've always, I mean, all throughout the band's career, we've always been, we've tried to make the show theatrical rather than rock and roll, you know? We would rather have it look like a ballet than like a discotheque, you know? And I mean, that's really where we started to really be able to develop the look, you know, in the big arenas. I mean, that was what it was all about, really, is to have a more theatrical, restrained, in a way. Although it was quite dramatic to see it, it was not very flashy. It was just theatrical.
sets in jars and a bomb inside a car. Spectacular, spectacular. If you follow me, there's a speciality. Some tears for you to see. Misery, misery. Roll on, roll on, roll on. See you. Next up on the bill, in a house up on the bill, we've a stripper in a till. What a thrill, what a thrill. Not content with that, with our hands behind our backs, pull Jesus from our hat. Get into that, get into that.
Rock and roll, oh, right before your eyes. in a glaze of Vaseline. We'll perform on guillotine. What a scene, what a scene. Next up on the stand, will you please extend a hand to Alexander's ragtime band, Dixieland, Dixieland.
Emerson, Lake & Palmer from Brain Salad Surgery with Carnival 9. Still to come, influenced by the classics or not, Keith Emerson reveals that progressive rock was a full contact sport the way ELP played it. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Carl Palmer, plus the voices of the late Keith Emerson and the late Greg Lake. In the studio with Emerson, Lake, and Palmer's biggest seller ever, Brain Salad Surgery.
Welcome back to In the Studio, spotlighting Brain Salad Surgery from Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. I'm Greg Lake.
Hi, Carl Palmer here in the studio.
Hi, this is Keith Emerson. Welcome back to In the Studio, this week featuring Emerson, Lake, and Palmer's Brain Salad Surgery.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Emerson, Lake, and Palmer may have been influenced by the classical composers, but trust me, there were no tuxedos on the huge Brain Salad Surgery tour. There were explosions, quadraphonic drum solos that swirled around the audience like a full-throttle locomotive, even Keith Emerson playing a flying grand piano. I'm serious. It turns out that Keith Emerson threw himself into his work on several occasions.
Hollywood Bowl, I fell down a hole. Which Greg can't remember any of these things.
Oh,
I fell down this hole. And I
live in dread.
I broke a rib. I've jumped over the organ. I've cleared the organ, ended up in the pit, with them still playing on stage, wondering where I've got to. And then I've not been allowed back on stage because I don't have a security pass. We played Meadowlands, and I actually went into the audience with the Hammond. The organ actually toppled over, and I went with it into the. It was lucky we had all the crew because this thing weighs about 340 pounds. I went right over the top and ended in the second row of the audience, and I just thought there's got to be somebody underneath this instrument. He's got to have killed somebody. The road crew, strong guys, they managed to get it and save the actual weight while I actually ended in the second row. The audience loved it. They thought it was planned. I mean, nobody, thank God, was hurt. No, I've broken so many ribs and... Carl's also had an accident too on stage, didn't you? You stepped backwards and fell into a...
When we used to have... at the back of... The grand piano used to come up through the middle of the stage, right on the hydraulic. And the game was we'd all come to the front of the stage, take a bow. Whilst this was happening, the floor would open up and up would come a piano, right? And that would be whatever. Anyway, I was at the front of the stage with the guys taking a bow, and I forgot, you know, totally sort of dazed. Stepped back, the stage had already opened, and I sort of fell into the piano.
It's funny now when you look back.
I got caught because it was a grand piano and the lid was already open, but it was below stage level. So as I stepped back, I kind of slid down the roof, the lid of the piano, and I was caught by this burly sort of road manager.
Threw back again.
And over the four decades since Brain Salad Surgery and its massive tour dominated the rock headlines, Greg Lake speaks for the trio regarding the timelessness of much of their work.
It's always nice to hear your music played, and it's always nice that people like it. You know, it's a very nice feeling after you've recorded, especially when you've recorded it a long time ago. I mean, one expects, in a way, to hear your current record being played, but when people play things from years ago, it's a very gratifying feeling that people still like it. Yeah, it is very nice.
But it turns out that the show that never ends, my friends, indeed did close in March 2016 with the sudden death of Keith Emerson. The Emerson, Lake & Palmer keyboard maestro had been struggling with a repetitive stress issue in his right hand for almost 20 years, so debilitating to his keyboard playing that Keith had what professional baseball pitchers call Tommy John surgery to replace the motor nerve in his right forearm. Here's lifelong friend Carl Palmer.
So he had the operation, and he finished the album with one hand. You know, he played all the parts with one hand because he had a terrific left hand. I mean, terrific left hand. And the operation lasted about 19 years. The problem was on his right hand, the two little fingers used to curl under after about 40 minutes, 50 minutes of playing. Oh. It was to do with the ulnar nerve or some nerve in the elbow in when the you bang. Elbow. It was transplanted to his forearm. And basically, he knows himself that possibly, you know, he needn't have had such a severe operation, but he did. And we were in communication right up until we played 2010, 25th of July, High Voltage, which was one of the first prog rock festivals. Got recorded. That took 5 weeks of rehearsal, and that was a problem for me because I realized then that we couldn't produce. I have a very simple philosophy, you know, and this is for me. I will always play as long as I can maintain my standard, and I apply that to any band. If we can improve, then that's really what I want. If we can't maintain and we can't improve and we go below the line, then we have to stop. But what happened was a lot of the music had to be put onto a sequencer that Keith would find difficult playing, or we'd try and improve it by using a sequencer anyway. It could have gone both ways. But it took a long time. And I noticed that the standard we reached really wasn't where we left off. So I was happy to do the show from a nostalgic point of view, but not happy to carry on. And of course, within a week of doing that, I did have to let everyone know. Keith understood immediately. He's a... It was an extreme realist. He knew that the game was up, you know, and I tried to say it as nicely as possible. He got it. Greg Lake was a little bit bitter. And we didn't speak to each other for, a year and a half or whatever.
Wasn't the first time.
But wasn't the first time. And that was okay. He eventually got it. He got it. Because the problem was we could have gone around the world and said goodbye to everybody, but we couldn't take 3 or 4 days off and then play a gig because the band always needed to keep rehearsing on days off. And we couldn't do that. You know, it's just practically impossible to move and rehearse. So I realized that logistically on what we had left, that it was a one time and we best do it in our homeland and say goodbye to all of the people in the UK who gave us our start. Unfortunately, the country that made us America, which made the band, you know, global, you know, we couldn't really come here and play because it just wouldn't have worked, because we couldn't play 4 or 5 nights in a row. We couldn't play 2 at the very, very most. I wanted to augment the band, but that didn't go down very well. And I said it was an industry standard now. We could do this. Keith was up for that. Greg wasn't. So there wasn't a way out. So the drawbridge had to come down.
There'll be snow at Christmas. They said there'll be peace on earth, but instead it just kept on raining. A veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and a distant choir.
the peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell, and eyes full of tinsel and fire. They sold me a dream of Christmas. They sold me a silent night. They told me a fairy story till I believed in the Israelite. And I believed in Father Christmas. I looked to the sky with excited eyes. Then I woke with a yawn in the first light of dawn. I saw him and through his disguise. I wish you a hopeful Christmas. I wish you a brave new year. All anguish, pain and sadness, leave your heart and let your road be clear. They said there'd be snow at Christmas. They said there'd be peace on earth. Hallelujah, Noel, be hail and heart hell. The Christmas we get we deserve.
In 2016, we lost Keith Emerson in March, and then Greg Lake in December. May God rest their souls for all eternity. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest Carl Palmer, and God rest the souls of Keith Emerson and Greg Lake. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Red Beard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2019, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.